because when they hear bells ringing, they feel they must go and vote. You're welcome, Dad.
Thank you, ma'am.
Yeah. Advocate, I just want to put this to you before you start. We have made a commitment with members of the panel to be to a point when asking questions, but also it will work even better if candidates, their responses are sharp and to a point. If I'm saying that to a lawyer, I'm sure you understand better than when I'm saying it. So we really appreciate your cooperation. The first opening one to allow you to circle in is just to share with panel members work experience, educational background, anything that you've come, you say, when I walk into this board of SABC, I will bring this to the table. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and good afternoon to members. My name is Mutsidi Lekalakala from Alexandra, Joburg. I attended my primary school in Alex, and then I had to move over to the countryside Bretts, where I completed my matric. Upon matriculating, I came back to Alex, and I got involved in the politics of the day, and I end my time in detention, and that's where I started my tertiary education. I started my tertiary education through UNISA after I was granted permission to study whilst in detention. Upon my release, I went full-time to the University of the Witwatersrand, where I did my BA Law, my LLB, and then higher diploma in company law, after which I then went to RAU, now UJ, where I did my master's LLM in tax. Upon graduating all that, I started what was the first community law clinic in Alex. We then partnered with the Legal Aid Board, and we took on candidate attorneys. I was actually also one of those candidate attorneys taken on by the Alex Community Law Clinic. I finished my articles and then started up my own law firm. I practiced as an attorney, later as an advocate, and then I left and then worked for the public service. I first worked as a director in the GPL, and then later went and worked as a chief director in the National Department of Social Development, left and then worked for Telkom as an executive responsible for public policy and legislation, and then left, worked for the Gauteng Gambling Board as the CEO, and then left and then worked for the city of Johannesburg as the secretary to council. And after my contract ended, I worked for the city of Ekurhuleni again as the secretary to council, city of Ekurhuleni. I have acquired experience over the years as an executive, and I think that acquired experience will stand me in good stead to contribute positively towards ensuring that the SABC, which we all know is in trouble, gets out of that trouble and becomes a winning organization again.
Thank you very much, Honorable Galako, then Honorable Kaba, Honorable Fandam.
Afternoon, Advocate. If I remember well, it's not the first time that you have been applying for the board to be considered as a candidate to be appointed to the board of the SABC. I'm sure you have been following the SABC. What do you think are the problems that makes the board, after being appointed, falling into the same problem of having now to be dissolved in your...
Thank you, Honourable Member. There are legacy and governance issues that have been troubling the SABC board, and then those should be attended to. There has to be a program for the restoration of the integrity and the credibility of the board to ensure that there is accountability and transparency. That is in respect of governance, but in respect of operational and commercial strategies of the board, there has to be a robust and implementation of mission critical operational and commercial strategies to ensure financial sustainability of the board, so that the board then is able to carry out the public mandate that it has. And the SABC is also then able to carry out that public mandate that it has, and the board to be able to carry out its fiduciary duties as the board of the SABC.
Having said exactly that, because we've dissolved the board precisely because they were failing to carry those duties, fiduciary duties. Because the board is composed of two elements. There's the executive and the who are directors in the SABC. And then you have board members, people who go through this process, we interview, we appoint them as parliament. What do you do? Are their roles the same in the board?
Thank you, Honourable Member. The board comprises of both executive and non-executive directors, and their responsibilities are distinct. The role of the non-executive board members, board directors, is the appointment, amongst others, the appointment of executive directors. And they are responsible for the overall direction and control of the board as non-executives. And then the executives are responsible for the day-to-day running of the board in terms of the parameters as set by the non-executive directors of the board, in them exercising their fiduciary duties, in ensuring that there's good governance, there is proper accounting, and that the execution of the mandate of the board, of the SABC.
I'm sure you will be aware that there are acts that govern the SABC, how it operates, how the board relates to the executive. Of all these acts, you have your PFMA, you have your Companies Act, you have your Broadcasting Act. Which one is the principal act? When you deal with the problems of, I'm sure in the past, you might have seen that there have been those problems in the SABC. And also, you will have other things like memorandum of understanding between the minister and the board. Which ones supersede each other?
Well, ultimately, the Constitution is the supreme law of the country, and where there is conflict between two acts, you then resort to the Constitution ultimately for guidance. But in respect of the pieces of legislation governing the SABC, because it's a corporation, it has been incorporated, so the Companies Act also comes into play, the Broadcasting Act comes into play. But as I said, where there is a conflict, the conflict has to be resolved through looking at what the Constitution says. And recently there was a conflict in respect of the powers of the minister in respect of the appointment of non-executive directors, etc., etc. And then the matter was taken to court, and then court then made a determination because there was a conflict between the Broadcasting Act and the Companies Act in respect of the responsibility of the minister. Then the court ultimately then made a determination as to who is ultimately, what the responsibilities of different role players are in respect of that, and then the court held that it is the responsibility of non-executive directors to appoint executive directors without the involvement of the minister.
Then lastly, Chair, there's this which have been in the public domain and argument which have been aroused and the conflict every time between exactly what you have explained, sometimes alluded to try, the minister does that, it is said he's actually trying to actually take away the independence of the SABC and the board itself. So with regard to that, what is this independence? Can you actually explain it to me?
Okay. The minister as a shareholder representative would have responsibilities. And the board would also have responsibilities. Which responsibilities they must carry out independently. The minister does not have to interfere in the operation of the board. The minister sets policy parameters within which the board has to operate. And the board then will be responsible for day-to-day running and the direction of the corporation. So independence means the freedom of speech by the SABC, the independence and the right to journalistic independence, creative independence, as well as programming independence. Those should be then left to the board to determine without the interference or the involvement of the minister, because the minister would have set broad policy parameters within which the SABC has to operate and the board to operate.
Lastly, if political parties, as political parties, whether it's EFF, ANC, UDM, you are a member of the board, you are in there, you pick up that these parties are interfering with the newsroom there, trying to influence those directors who had news, or some of the board members get involved. Two questions. How will you deal with that in relation to parties? How will you deal with that in relation to a board member which goes to newsroom trying to influence that newsroom for a particular political party?
Okay, in respect of political parties, Political parties should know that the board has to operate independently. And in instances where they interfere through committees set by the board, maybe governance and whatever committee that is responsible for that, such political parties would have to be engaged through your stakeholder relation and engagement programs, engage those political parties and indicate to them that they are now interfering with the independence of the board, and that this is how the board should be run. And through that engagement and the interaction with those political parties who seek to get involved, you will then be able to set the parameters so that political parties should then know the space in which they play and the space that is set aside for the board to play, in order to ensure that it is independent and then is an apolitical body that is meant to serve the interest of all the citizens of the country. And if it's a board member, obviously that there should be a code of conduct on how members should conduct themselves. A member should then be approached and be told that he is now acting in transgression of the code of conduct that has been set. He should be told that there's king codes which determines how boards should relate to the administration, and that they are now acting in violation of that, and such board member then should be told to stop from doing that. And if they are not, I suppose then the appointing authority should then be approached and then be told that about the behavior of the board member, and then it is then incumbent upon the appointing authority then to deal with that board member, and it, in order to ensure that a board member carries out their fiduciary responsibilities in a correct and proper manner. And if it means removing them from the board, the appointing authority would so choose.
Honorable Clerk.
Okay. Thanks, Ntateri Kalakala. Welcome. I would request that you would note my questions so that when I've asked you, you will then respond holistically. I think it's important we listen to you because you have applied for this. I don't know, man. I'm interested into the culture of non-payment of TV licenses by our communities. You know, people are unemployed and they don't pay. I don't know if you also have one, if you are paying it, because maybe it could start with you so that we are able to collect. What can you do that we really address this problem? Two will be that in terms of the digital migration, I think it is important for the SABC. So, as a member that will be appointed, how would you contribute to its speedy implementation? And then lastly, what could be your role in ensuring that we avoid bankruptcy we may have had for so long in the SABC? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Member. And in respect of the first question of the non-payment of TV licenses, this is a general problem, not only affecting the payment of TV licenses, but generally affecting the payment of services rendered by municipalities to people because of the economic situation. I think the requirement for people to pay
should be accompanied by an extensive awareness campaign, which sets out the rationale for the payment, that it is one of the methods of funding the SABC, for the SABC to be able to continue to carry out its public mandate. There has to be as well credit control in place, and where statements are sent out to TV license holders and there is non-payment, credit control policy should be put in place. And I suppose now that we are on analog, it's difficult to do as MultiChoice does, because it's digital, they are always able to switch off because you subscribe. Maybe once we move on to digital platforms, we will then be able to enforce credit control better and then ensure that people pay licenses. But as I said, it's a general problem as a result of the economic situation that the people find themselves in. The little that they get, they have to prioritize. What they pay for, they will start with paying for transport to be able to go to work, and then TV licenses will be number 10 maybe on their list. And if there's anything left, then they will then think of paying for the TV license. But however, the irony of this thing is that with a subscription for DSTV, people will always find ways of getting even that limited bouquet and then get money to pay for that, because it's part of entertainment, the poorest of the poor, that would be the only source of entertainment for them. So they would require to have even at least that limited bouquet. So they will maybe in the list of priorities put it a bit higher on their priorities to pay for at the end of the month, because that's the only form of entertainment that they will have. But as I said, generally, awareness campaign, why the need for payment, and the money once paid should also then be used properly by the SABC, so that people should see that there is value in paying the TV license, because we get quality content, we get quality programming, we get to see programs that we would enjoy, that would make us then want to pay for the TV license. So it's a holistic approach to non-payment. Check up your services, check up your programming, and the awareness, and then the combination will then make people want to pay. But as I say, the underlying factor there for non-payment is the economic situation. On the migration thing, it's been something in the works for many years. And the department, I suppose, is responsible for driving this process of migration to digital, and as a board member we would impress in our engagement with the department the need to speed up the process of migration, because it will afford us a platform for multi-channel programming, broadcasting, which would have a far deeper reach than the analog. And so persuading the department responsible for rolling this out to expedite the rolling out of this program. So as the board, our role then would be engaging with the department responsible to show them the need for expediting this rollout. Bankruptcy Like I said initially when I started, the legacy that has to be dealt with by the board of the SABC to ensure that there's good governance, there is transparency in the manner in which the monies received are used, are deployed, so that the content that we get is improved, etc., etc., and there are internal controls put in place to ensure that every cent that is received is accounted for and is used for the purposes for which it was received, ensuring that there is strict control and accountability, putting in place structures like your audit and risk committees, empowering them so that they are able to have the capacity to can ensure that all monies received are spent wisely and for the purposes for which they were received.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ndlozi. Honorable Fanda.
Thanks, Chair. So part of our work, obviously, in appointing SABC board members is that we look at their employment history to see, you know, how they've performed in their previous jobs. So I want to zoom in your role as the secretary to the Municipal Council in the city of Joburg between 2013 and 2017. You say that you approved the budget and strategic programs of council, as well as advised council on all administrative and legislative related matters. Am I correct? Right. So, the current administration in the city of Joburg has investigated a total of 4,000 cases of corruption and fraud amounting to 24 billion. And during your tenure, there was a contract for computers, 6 million for computers, and for 500 computers that were never delivered, but the money was paid. 19% of the budget was stolen through corruption. So given your role as the person who approves budget for council, who gives administrative and legal advice to council, how do you explain all this corruption that's been uncovered, given that you had the role about budgets and also giving legislative advice? So, for example, if there was a contract which you saw that procedures were not followed, given that you're an advocate, given your legal background, you would have said, this is not right. So please explain to me how you performed your role in an environment where there was rampant corruption. 18 billion worth of corruption that's been uncovered.
Thank you, Honorable Member. Maybe the starting point would be to explain the governance model in a municipality. Yes. We have a separation of power governance model. And as a secretary to council, I'm the head of the administration of the legislature. And the role of the legislature is oversight over the executive. The executive plans and then executes and spends the budget. But my role in respect of budget is in respect of the budget allocated to the legislature. Payment of councillors, their travel, etc., etc. And then I suppose in none of the AG reports, the legislature was cited as having incurred irregular, wasteful, and whatever expenditure. So, as the head of the administration of the legislature, I executed my responsibilities with diligence. And then where in the executive such are seen through the oversight role of the legislature, those will then be picked up, and then I would create a vehicle so that they are then referred to the MPEC. MPEC will then investigate, and then it will then report to council. I would have failed in my responsibilities if I did not create the platform to ensure that a report is made to the MPEC on those uncovered corrupt activities, and ensuring that a report is written from MPEC and it gets channeled through programming committee into council, and then council deliberates on that. I have done that in my role as the secretary to council, and without maybe blowing my own horn, as I said, the AG has never said that the legislature is a component, because you are also audited as a component, a wing of the municipality.
Right. So the reason I'm asking this question is because on the SABC board, we want people who are fearless and standing up to people who are fearless in standing up to corruption, people who will be fearless in coming to us when there is something happening at the SABC. So you worked in an environment where there was rampant corruption. There were 4,000 cases investigated of corruption. You cannot say to me, I was just a secretary of council, I was an independent entity, I didn't know what's going on. That's just, I don't buy that. You knew what was going on. You knew what was going on in council. You knew what contracts were being approved, what was being done. As a patriot, as a person who knows that taxpayers' money must be used for the people of South Africa and not to line the pockets of corrupt people, what did you do? So it's one thing to say, I was separate, it's me, I don't know, I wasn't there. You were there. You saw it happen. What did you do?
Okay. Let me start off by saying that the allegations that corruption of 424 billion or so uncovered.
Not allegations, it's fact. And there have been arrests made. So it's all facts, not allegations.
Okay. I'm following the events in the city of Johannesburg. And there will be public statements that are made about corruption that has been uncovered. And a special unit was set up to deal with that, headed by General Sibiya. Cases were referred to him. He investigated some of the cases. Some people were suspended. Some people challenged their suspension. Court found that they were not properly suspended, etc., etc. And other political parties have been asking.
Sorry, Chair. I'm going to interrupt you. My question was, what did you do? I'm not interested in what has happened now. I know all about the units that's been established. I'm interested in you as an individual. In an environment where there was rampant corruption, you, advocate Mutedi, like Lela Kalaka, what did you as an individual do? Because on the SABC board, we do not want people who turn a blind eye when bad things are happening. We want people who will stand up fearlessly for what is right, fearlessly for the people of South Africa. We do not want people who turn a blind eye while the people of our country are being robbed. So I ask you again, and please don't do me handles. I'm asking you, what did you do knowing that there was rampant corruption? You yourself, don't tell me anything else. My question is simple. If you did nothing, say I did nothing. And that's an answer. If you did do something, then tell me what it is. I'm not interested in other stories. That's my question, so please answer it.
I don't know whether I can be of help. I can add value. The same question was raised, and you spoke to the governance structures within municipality, and you spoke specifically about the division that you overseed and you could take responsibility for, and said there was never a time where the Auditor General raised issues of fruitless and wasteful expenditure, governance issues. So honorable member seems not to be satisfied with that. You see, I think we need to streamline it.
Chair, can I please be allowed to ask my own questions? I've asked him a pretty clear question. He understands it. I don't think anyone in this room understands. It's very unambiguous. I've asked the question several times, Chair. Please don't answer it on his behalf. I'm asking him, and I would like to ask it in the way that I'd like to ask it. I'm asking it for a reason. I'm not just asking it. Advocate, what did you do?
And so far as I had anything that I could do, I did everything I had to do in my role as a secretary of council, but insofar as I could do nothing about allegations that were made, and I was not sitting on the BACs, on the whatever committees that were responsible for tenders, I did nothing.
So your answer is, in an environment where you knew there was rampant corruption, you did nothing. Thank you.
No, my response is that rampant corruption apparently is uncovered now. At the point it happened, in hindsight, it was uncovered that rampant corruption occurred. But at the time I was there, there was no talk about rampant corruption. And there were processes put in place to ensure that corruption doesn't happen. There was an anonymous call line that you could call. You could report to group risk and assurance committee if you had information that could indicate corruption. When I was there, nothing of sort came to my attention.
Sorry, sir. 24 billions worth of corruption. That's a lot of money. There is no way anyone, if there's 24 billion worth of corruption, that someone can say, oh, I was not aware. It's impossible. It is highly impossible, and I'm sorry, I don't buy the argument. For me, it's you knew it was happening. There's no way you wouldn't have known. And you should have done something about it. You should have yourself been a whistleblower, because those are the kind of people we need on the SABC board. Because in the past, we've had people who are malleable, who stand back when there's political interference, who turn a blind eye. So we want people who are fierce patriots for this country. And for me, there's no way that you didn't know. And I don't believe that you didn't know. I think you turned a blind eye. Thank you very much.
I would describe myself as a fearless patriot who would want to see things done properly, and where there is any indication of malfeasance, corruption, I would be the first one to stand up and say there is corruption.
Any other honorable member who really has a burning question, We have seconds now left. Honorable Ndlozi.
No, Chair. This line of questioning is critical because Hitler did not himself serve as a worker in the gas chambers. And so we all sort of have this collective responsibility from different corners, particularly as bureaucrats, to watch out against the breaking of the law. Now let's go to a Gulen. And you had a responsibility, if I'm right, to advise counsel in relation to Mojapelo, the COO. Am I correct? His appointment back into counsel.
No, he came before me.
He arrived before you. But so just explain to me, when the debates came around the fact that he had not disclosed upon his appointment the corruption that SIU implicated him in relation to the legacy project. When that happened, we are told in council, which would be your responsibility, that information had not been distributed to members of council. Didn't that happen under your era?
Now. Okay. There were rumors that an SIU report had been received, but it was not formally transmitted to council. So councillors who were citing recommendations in the report were citing recommendations of an informally received report. The mayor's approach was that I have not received that report formally. It's the president's report, and the president has to transmit it to council through proper channels. And ultimately it was, and then an item on Joe Mojapelo served in council after it was formally and properly received. An item served in council, there was a debate on the issue.
The SIU report relates to 2010 corruption, which was published before your time as a Gurudini secretary. So you have the responsibility as the secretary to advise council legally in its debate, to furnish them with proper resources to tackle any question. Am I right? So it didn't have to be transmitted because it was a public document. Am I right? So, I mean, it's signed even by the president. It doesn't have to be, it's public knowledge. Mojapelo is implicated in the SIU report, but also is involved in a different corruption tender project. And the contestation of his appointment is on this basis. And you are saying it must be formally transmitted into the report, into the council, when it's a public knowledge document. It's not your document.
It was not public knowledge document until the president formally releases it. People who had sight of it used their own sources to get access to the document. And it is only after it was properly released by the president that it became a public document, upon which it then served in council.
Okay. I doubt that the timelines are correct. I think I put it to you that the publication of the SIU report was prior to that discussion. And as a result, in fact, even if that be the case, that it has to serve formally in council and be debated by who, because it's not a council document. It's a public republic document about people who messed up the 2010 and who were corrupt in relation to 2010. I understand that. I'm merely testing here because there's a big problem there at the SABC about formidability of characters and a sense of urgency with regards to dealing with dirty things and people who are undermining the public broadcaster's procurement policies, procurement capabilities. It's a big problem. And both in Johannesburg and in Ekurhuleni, your role is not quite pronounced, yet holding a very powerful position of secretary about appointments of so obviously corrupt characters?
Like I indicated, the governance model. If you understand the governance model properly, you would understand that I have a limited role in the appointment of those people as the secretary to council.
Sorry, I'm not speaking to the appointment. Once the matter serves in council,
yes.
The claim is that you did not distribute documents, particularly to members of the opposition, to undermine the efforts of Mujabilu being, his motion being processed in the council. That's part of the claims of members of the opposition in Ekurhuleni.
Yeah.
So I'm not talking about executive appointment, because the matter was raised in council that the man, because he refused to disclose his implication in the SIU report, therefore he must be fired or he must step out. That then became a council matter which you admit. So I'm not talking about his appointment, I'm talking about his contestation in council.
Okay. It came to council as a motion.
Yes.
And then my responsibility as a secretary to council is to receive motions, advise the speaker on the admissibility or otherwise of motions.
Let me stop you there.
Yes.
Now, when you do that advice, and I said this earlier on, you had to know that this guy is implicated in the SIU, because the SIU report had been published by then. It had been published by then. That's why the motion was relying on it. It's not people who had a sight of it. The timelines are very clear. So when you advise this speaker on the admissibility, they claim not only did you fail to highlight these questions of the corruption of this guy, you did not even distribute the programs properly.
Yeah, and I suppose those are claims. Now I'm stating facts. We received the motion. And in terms of the standing orders, the motion must be submitted to the Secretary of Council. I received it, took it to the Speaker, advised the Speaker on the advisability or otherwise, admissibility or otherwise of the motion. The motion was admitted and it became part of the program of Council. The motion was debated in Council and the opposite, the coalition partners defeated the motion by saying that that motion is based on hearsay, but the document has not been properly transmitted to council. It was then ultimately properly transmitted to council. That's why then a report was brought to council, and there was also a debate on the thing. So I did not hide anything from council, and then as I said, it gets received by the city manager, who is the accounting officer.
The last question. Don't you agree that in terms of the MFMA, you are supposed to have advised the speaker of disciplinary proceedings against Mujabilu?
No, not as the secretary of council. The accounting officer is the city manager. The report gets transmitted to the city manager. We then ensure that a report is compiled, it gets transmitted to programming, it gets discussed in programming, and then it goes to council. It is not the responsibility of the secretary to council. The accounting officer is the city manager. And they are responsible for the development of items, executive items that they bring to the legislature, and then through the leader of executive business in programming. So it is not the secretary to council who is responsible for compiling the report. It is the city manager.
I put it to you that in processing motions, when you give legal advice to the speaker about the admissibility of what council members, as motions members, are raising, that you have the responsibility to bring this to the attention of the House. And also to recommend that what members are saying is legally admissible, because they were wanting the guy to be subjected to a DC. And the cry there, which I'm aware, which I think you do know, these things I'm saying are not the first time, you're not hearing from the first time. There was a push that the guy must be subjected to a DC, and that part of what you should have advised is that that is admissible. That you, I mean, that dilly-dally between what council can do, its powers in relation to its members, and what executive members, when they act as executives, do. It's really, it sounds to me like a farce, because there are powers as council to hold the executive accountable, to put your council to have teeth and bite with the executive. Often we get failed in the advice we get from the support structures of parliament. And that's what the council members in the opposition in Ekurhuleni said about you. What is your reaction to that?
I'll try to explain again. My responsibility is to advise on the admissibility or otherwise of the motion. And then it gets processed into council processes. And it gets debated there. The decision that is taken is political. It's not administrative. So mine is to ensure that it gets debated on. And which I did. I said the motion is admissible. It meets the requirements of admissibility in terms of the standing orders. It must be debated. And it was debated. But the decisions taken are political. So the coalition partners voted that way. The opposition parties voted that way. It's not because on my advice.
I see I've agitated you. Thank you very much.
That's
the end of my line of questioning.
Can I just guide the panel now?
Yes.
With this candidate alone, we've taken an hour. So if we have to be consistent, then we must be looking at midnight. Honorable Van Schalkwyk and Honorable Tsini, they've been raising their hands, and I have thought maybe they'll be satisfied.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think, as I can recall correctly, we've indicated when we started it's only 5 minutes per person allowable. And I think the Honorable Ndlozi used exactly 3 minutes of my time, so I'll just use the 2 minutes that's left.
My apologies, Honorable Member.
Not accepted, Honorable Member. Honorable or... Ms. Advocate, coming back to the interview and the what is important, we are dealing with a board membership of SABC. I just want us to be clear. And taking into consideration your tertiary education and seeing that there are candidates who are not really specialized in the field of broadcasting and such. I want to acknowledge that at least I see that you have some kind of qualification in terms of broadcasting law and telecommunications law. So can you then give us an indication of what value would you add to the SABC? Taking into consideration that qualification and the relevant experience that you had previously in the same broadcasting or telecommunications area, what value can you add to the organization? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Member. I have acquired experience as an executive. In my different roles and as a senior manager in government. And then we know that local government in particular is highly regulated, and there has to be strict compliance with the prescripts of the law, and maybe contrary to popular belief, I have ensured in my responsibilities to make sure that there is a strict compliance with the prescripts of the law. And where there is a non-compliance, I would not hesitate to raise that. So now, the value that I would add to the SABC board should I be appointed would be to use that acquired experience over the years to ensure that there are strict internal controls put in place, not only in paper but practicalized, to ensure that there is strict compliance with the prescripts, to ensure good and ethical governance at the SABC.
Honorable Tseli, thank you very much, Advocate.
Advocate, there is a debate which suggests that there should be a review of the role of the executives in the board of the SABC. What's your take on this?
The role of the executive board members. King 3 sets out different responsibilities and it delineates responsibilities.
And I'll appreciate if you can be very brief, because
yeah.
I still have two other questions.
Okay. My attitude to that would be that non-executive executive directors should be allowed to carry out their responsibilities of day-to-day running of the SABC without interference by non-executive directors, whose responsibility is to ensure that they carry out their fiduciary duties and that there is good governance.
The SABC board has on a number of occasions said to Parliament part of the reasons why they find themselves in financial difficulties is the issue of unfunded mandate. If appointed a board member, how do you find yourself contributing to deal with this particular challenge?
Yes, the board has a public mandate, and it's that mandate is unfunded. The government's contribution in the past has been minimal, about 2% of towards the funding of the SABC board. I think government should look at increasing the portion of funding to the SABC so that it is able to then achieve universality, accessibility, and all the public mandate components of that unfunded mandate.
Now that we are moving towards the 8th of May, what do you understand to be the role of the SABC in these elections? And what do you think the board must do to ensure that it minimizes complaints from some people, or let me say political parties?
The SABC must be seen to be impartial, must be seen to be independent, must be seen to be not biased towards a particular political party, but carry out their mandate of informing and educating the public about the AIDS in an unbiased, apolitical manner. When they cover political parties, they must ensure that all parties are given adequate and equal, equitable time for them to be able to espouse their policies and manifestos and their offerings to the public without biasness and any show of political leaning towards a particular political party.
Thanks.
Honorable
taken more than an hour. So I think we have to make up as we move forward. I hope you have a two-point question, and you're the last one.
See, I think I can speak for Honorable Ndlozi.
Please, I think this will create problems going forward.
No, the chair allowed me to speak. Can you not stop me? You are not chairing this meeting.
I'm not chairing, but I think this will
no,
create problems.
No, no, no.
Because I doubt if you will still give another member a follow-up opportunity like this.
No, no, the chair gave me, you're not chairing, sir. Please, let the chair, not you. So, I think the point that Honorable Ndlozi and I were trying to make, and he can stop me if he thinks I'm disagreeing, is that when appointing SABC board members, we do not only look at your qualifications, your experience, but we look at your character. So, maybe this is an extreme example. There will be people during apartheid who are bureaucrats, and history asks, what did you do? And you're like, I was just a good bureaucrat. There was things happening around me, but I just was a good bureaucrat. I ticked all the boxes. And history will ask, what did you do? And that will be your answer. So that is what the line of questioning was trying to do. What did you do in an environment where there was rampant corruption? You did nothing. And you have not convinced us that knowing, there's no way you didn't know. Did you? No. Knowing all of that, did you do anything?
The repetition, Chair.
Honorable Member, I may also then say.
Sorry, Advocate. Let me hear, Honorable Members. Honorable Kaba and Honorable Kalako.
Chair, I'm saying the repetition question. She asked it earlier, just coming in a separate way. And Chair, you are orderly to say a point two question, not an explanation.
Honorable Kalako.
For me, I wanted just to make a follow-up on I do understand and follow your facts, because you are not talking about TSA. You were there. So it's not correct. Van Damme is not Honorable Van Damme representing us when he says he has failed to convince us. She must say she has failed to convince her, which is correct. But Chair, I'm coming to because you see, I'm sure this is going to happen to other candidates when we deal with. I was interested when you were answering the Honorable Member around Gauteng, what he called corruption, and you were saying you are putting the facts. You have been following the situation there. But you know what, I don't want to go into a 24 billion because it's a thumbs up at the moment. Even their investigations have not come with any conclusive thing. It's just slogans for electioneering. So I want, in your knowledge and your opinion, because some of those things happened, you were not there or you were there. Following that situation, what are the, because it's important when you talk with about corruption, to actually make sure we are putting members of the board there who were not tainted at all, become bad without covering or participating into that. I'm interested in those facts which you are coming with about so-called 24 billion.
Okay. Like I said, I'm following the events in the city of Joburg because I'm resident there. So I have an interest. Statements would be made about corruption, the quantum of looted money will be bandied around. But investigations are underway. And at every council meeting, councillors would ask, give us concrete evidence of the statements that are made, and that is not forthcoming. Like I said, investigations were done, some people were arrested, some people are on suspension for over 2 years now. Their cases have not been finalized because there is no evidence. So, statements are made which are not backed up by concrete facts and evidence when these matters are taken on. I can give an example. The ombudsman of the city of Joburg was accused of corruption in the procurement of ITC equipment, etc., etc., and software. He took the city to court. His suspension was said to be unlawful. And later, the labor court said that exonerated him. But he had left the city then. So, he was not found guilty of anything. And as I said, there are many cases such as those where allegations were made. And an allegation is an allegation, and it becomes fact until it's proved in court that indeed that has happened. So these are the bulk of the 24 billion or whatever. It's still allegations. And Member Van Damme, I may say also then said that we now have 101 commissions. But then I may ask the same question then and say, what were honourable members doing? I may ask Honourable Van Damme, what did you do when such so-called state capture is uncovered? What were you doing? What did you do?
Honourable Advocate, I think you excited honourable members. They took more time with you than others. But is there anything which you think, if your name is out there, might attract somebody in the public and bring it to Parliament's attention about yourself? Just be to a point.
I don't think so. Remember, Honourable Chair, the list was published for people to comment, not only now, even in the past. I was on the short list, which was the process was scanned. I was there, and the name was there. And then if people had anything, they could have indicated that there are issues around me.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. We thank you for coming forward. You can leave now. Honourable Members, I'm told they stay outside if you can take a 10-minute break. Honourable Members...